Welcome to Pencils Down, a Finalis podcast. This is a show for listeners wanting to learn more about the ins and outs of the private securities brokerage landscape. Each episode will feature insightful conversations with the world's leading investment bankers, placement agents, capital providers, startup CEOs, and more. And with that, let's get into the show.
Fed, it's my distinct pleasure and privilege to turn the tables on you, to have you as the interviewee for this episode of Pencils Down instead of as its host. To our podcast audience, my name is Lloyd Nebris, Communications Manager at Finalis, and I'm both thrilled and honored to host today's episode, in which we will continue exploring the Finalis story via the lens and perspective of its founder, our guest today, Federico Baradello. Welcome, Fed.
Lloyd, thank you so much for having me today. It's a little unusual to be a guest on a podcast that I usually host, but really thrilled to be with you today.
Wonderful. Part one of this story started in season one of the podcast, back in mid-2020, when Finalis' CTO, Guido Barocio, interviewed Fed in an episode titled My Journey into Entrepreneurship. It would turn out to be the last episode of that first season of Pencils Down. In this episode today, in this second season of the podcast, we'll cover three areas. First, a bit of a recap from that interview you had with Guido, revisiting a couple of points you both discussed, you know, that kind of call up for a follow-up 2 years later. Second, we'll talk about how far Finalis has come since, what the company has accomplished, and how. And finally, I'm sure our listeners would like to hear from you about what you see of Finalis' future. One, two, maybe five or more years down the road. So let's get started.
Excited to dive in.
You characterized the world of 2020 in that conversation with Guido as, quote, one of chaotic multipolarity, unquote. With Finalis starting up in tandem with a black swan crisis of the COVID-19 pandemic. Do you see any of that chaos, much of it still resonating to the present, with, not to mention, new crises, such as Russia's invasion of Ukraine earlier this year, resolving into some sort of picture with which we can make some sense of in these waning months of 2022?
It's a really good question, and it's a big question. So let me try to tackle it in a few parts. I don't think that over the course of the last 2.5 some years since COVID started, that we are getting to any semblance of what we could consider to be normalcy. And maybe this is in fact a new normal, where you have a confluence of, you know, climate-driven calamities, violence, and war as a direct consequence of multipolarity, economic uncertainties, and just kind of the winds of change in terms of the global markets have been really dramatic. And I think it almost appears that we're in this kind of continual phase of thrash in many aspects of the world economy, global politics. And, you know, one of the things that, you know, I think about in the context of Finalis is what that means from a company building perspective. That is to say, you know, how do we think about building a team, building a culture that's resilient to all of those kind of exogenous shocks, while at the same time making sure that the business model itself capitalizes on the opportunities that are generated as a direct consequence of that. Of that turmoil or that thrash. Mm-hmm. You're, you know, probably familiar with the notion that, I believe it's what is it, the Chinese word of crisis, yes, also means indeed. Opportunity. And in many ways, this period of time over the last 2.5 years since COVID has set in, as calamitous as it has been, my family was affected by it deeply. I'm sure yours was, and I'm sure many finalists and many people listening have been deeply affected by it. it also created opportunities for a young startup like Finalis to grow. Mm-hmm. And so I think sometimes I feel conflicted, frankly, mm-hmm. in the sense that this difficult period has also created in many ways a set of opportunities that we've been in a position to take advantage of.
You know, I remember the interview you had with Daniela Messina, in which you spoke of particularly this, you know, to have found an opportunity when she started her own startup, you know, at the very beginning of COVID as well, that somehow it did give her a kind of opening that may not have been there were these crises actually not happening, which is really interesting, I think. I think that's shared by a number of our other clients, I think.
I think so, too. If you're looking to compete as a newcomer in an industry or in a space where there are a number of incumbents, and if those incumbents have been built up and developed processes and strategies around the old way of doing things, then you, as this newcomer, are inherently going to be more nimble, right? A little laser sailboat is much more nimble than you know, a 60-foot yacht, right? And you're in a position where you can move faster. And we were in the position launching in May of 2020 where we could adapt ourselves to the new reality quite quickly. And that ability to adapt is not quite there for larger, more established companies that were delivering the types of services and solutions that we deliver. And that ended up working out in our favor. And I suspect that's true for many other entrepreneurs that came of age over the last 2.5 years.
Yes, and since the company, you know, was virtual in the very beginning, it certainly played into that, you know, that events of you know, that exogenous shock. In that same conversation, Guido, you said it was important for a startup CEO to evolve with the company. How have you done so? What direction or directions has this co-evolution taken? And what for you has been the most illuminating aspect of this evolution?
It's a great question. The big evolution for me in the context of being a CEO has been really around learning how and when to let go and to empower other people to do the job that I might have previously done. You know, in the early days of the startup, you know, I was the head of sales, I was the head of finance, I was the head of marketing, I was the head of customer success. There were many functions that I was the general counsel. There were many functions that I was performing kind of simultaneously as we were looking to breathe life into this new business. And you're not going to be able to scale a company very successfully if that's the playbook that you're going to exercise as a CEO as you continue to grow the business. You have to learn how and when to let go. And that is a very difficult balance because as you make those decisions, there are significant implications with respect to culture, with respect to how certain tasks are actually going to be performed. You know, so from time to time, I'll see somebody doing something in the company that may not have been the way I would have done it, but that's okay, because by definition, you are empowering other people to perform certain tasks, and you're also leaning on their judgment and their experience and their expertise in order to continue to kind of scale the enterprise and move things forward. And it can be difficult. And then the flip side is also true. Sometimes you empower people and things don't work out. And so I think that has been a learning curve for me, frankly, because the career that I had previous to launching Finalis was as an attorney. and that's the polar opposite, because when you're an attorney, you are responsible for every fine detail of a certain deliverable for a client. And I had to get used to this reality where I wasn't going to control every fine detail as it related to growing and scaling Finalis.
Yeah, I know you like to say you're a, quote, recovering lawyer, unquote, who 5 years ago now dove headfirst into the startup world to build this regtech company from scratch, really, driven by the idea that, as you said, private market dealmaking is broken. And so from that very nervy beginning, if I have to say, you launched your startup, and not to belabor this, but it is really extraordinary, concurrent with the catastrophic crisis of a full-blown global pandemic, the likes of which humanity has not seen in over a century. What has it been like for you as a startup founder building this business? What expectations did you have in the beginning of the journey? And what has surprised you the most about the experience this far?
I think the first thing that I can say is that I'm not the type of person that tends to look backwards or look down, depending on, you know, how I might be flying at a certain altitude, but I have a fear of heights myself, and I don't like to look down. And so I think that if I had the kind of the wherewithal or the sense of perspective of looking down or looking backwards, I might have felt a little bit more daunted especially in the early days of growing Finalis, when we were signing up our first customers, than I ultimately felt, because at the time, and it continues to be my modus operandi today, I tend to just look forward and I never look down or backwards. And I think that that helps, frankly, because in the early days, and we're still in the early days to be clear, but in the hyper early days, it was absolutely crazy what we were embarking on.
Mm-hmm. I think there's a story here that will eventually be told, I think.
Which was to build, you know, the first truly category creating investment banking back office as a service platform in an industry that hasn't really seen change in this domain for a very long time. And frankly, you know, to sell that solution set into an industry that isn't known for picking up, for being an early adopter in new technology. And so it was incredibly audacious. But we just continued to look forward. We never looked backwards or down as we embarked on growing the business. And one client led to 5 clients, led to 20 clients, led to 50 clients, led to now over 150 clients today. And it's that same relentless drive and focus on just moving forward and continuing to more fully manifest the vision that we've set out for ourselves.
You mentioned earlier about, you know, in passing about the culture of the company. So I have a question here about the team part, the people of Finalis, so you're gathering in the team. And I know this might sound self-serving for me to say, but I've been with Finalis for almost a year now, and I do think you have quite a knack for finding the right people to do the right job and to have the right mix of people from the leadership circles right on down to each team member in all of Finalis' functional areas, which, as you say, has really grown from about when I arrived in Finalis, it was about 35 members, team members, or 40 in the fall of 2021 to now, less than a year later, almost 100 in mid-2022. I would hazard a guess that it's not a skill you gained as an M&A lawyer at Kirkland & Ellis, which skill, not incidentally, you continue to demonstrate to the very present, with Finalis' recent hiring of world-class heads of product, engineering, global markets, and growth. Pretty major hires. So where or how did you learn to do this? How to successfully wield this organizational and human talent skill in the crafting of a demonstrably well-functioning organization?
The CEO's number one job is to, after raising capital, is to build a team. And I remember in the earliest days of the company thinking that before we had a product, before we had any capital, that my first foray into sales, leaving the law firm, was actually my capability or my capacity to sell the vision to other people and to have other people decide for themselves that they were going to make Finalis or building the company a core chapter of their lives and their careers. And that's a really significant thing if you think about it. What's, you know, the average life expectancy today and the average length of a career, and you think about how precious that real estate is, you know, the projects, the initiatives that take up your time from 9 a.m. to 6 p.m. on a daily basis. It's a very precious real estate that you're asking somebody to commit to a given initiative. And I thought to myself, you know, even if I don't have a customer, even if there's no product to speak of, and this is just an idea, if I'm able to persuade the value of this vision to other people, then maybe that's indicative of the fact that there's actually an opportunity here, or there's an opportunity for me as a founder to build a company. And I wish I could say that I figured it out from day one, but that's not true.
Well, it seems like you have very good intuitions about how to do this. You did it on the fly, essentially.
Well, it was completely on the fly. And I think as a company, we were, you know, I think a lot of people don't fully appreciate the fact that I quit Kirkland and Ellis to start Finalis on August the 15th, 2017. Finalis, as it is currently known, launched into market in April, May of 2020. And so you ask yourself, what happened in that intervening period? And in that intervening period, it was a growing process, a learning process, cycling through different strategies, and working with a variety of people.
The whole bootstrapping story, really.
Exactly. And I think oftentimes, and I think this is especially an important message for anybody thinking about entrepreneurship, the stories of companies are told in a very glossy way, where it would be very easy for me to say, oh, the Finalis story started in May of 2020. But that's not true. And that's not true for the vast majority of startups. The truth is far messier, typically. And in my case, as a first-time founder, there were a lot of things I had to unlearn as a lawyer, and a lot of things I had to learn as a budding entrepreneur. And, you know, to me, it was the best education in business. And it's been the best education business that I could have ever imagined, this transition process.
I would say it was the burning fire, this vision you had for this project, for this startup, that actually led you clearly from point to point along this sort of bootstrapping process over, you know, several years before a startup even. So we have finalists from North America and Europe, Asia and South America. Was there intentionality there for you? Was a global multicultural team part of the vision you had for it at the beginning? Or has this characteristic been a happy accident of sorts?
I would say it's been a happy accident. And now in retrospect, I couldn't imagine the company existing in any other way. In the earliest days of the company, or around the time, you know, let's just go back to the summer of 2017, I was singularly focused on building a company here in the San Francisco Bay Area with everybody located in the San Francisco Bay Area. And a variety of things happened. Number one, I had a lot of trouble, and I talked about this in the prior podcast. I had a lot of trouble identifying a technology partner who could work alongside me here in the Bay Area as we started to build out what ultimately became Finalis. I knew I needed a technology partner as an attorney. This was going to be a technology company after all. But I had a lot of trouble identifying the right partner. And even when I did identify somebody who I thought could be the right partner, it was very difficult to sustain that person's interest over a period of time. And so I decided to go back to my roots, which is the fact that my parents are Argentinian immigrants to the United States. And I started looking for a potential technology partner in Argentina. And so it was out of a sense of just pure grit and scrappiness that ultimately...
And imagination, I think.
Right. But I think in my case, I was fortunate. You know, my dad runs a venture fund in Argentina. So I had an immediate network that I could leverage. And I thought to myself, well, let's give that a try. And it ended up working exceptionally well. And then in the process of, you know, really scaling Finalis in a COVID context, it became just a reality of how we work, that, you know, COVID forced everybody back into their homes or their home offices in order to do their work. You know, I previously had pretty strong opinions about the need for people to work out of offices, because that was the culture that I came from within the law firm. But I started to see the benefits, very significant benefits from a talent perspective, because now the only real limiting factor for a startup like Finalis in identifying and acquiring great talent is time zones, if even that. And it dramatically increased the types of folks that we could reach out to and explore their interest in joining Finalis, where we weren't necessarily just limited by any one geography. And so that has become actually, I think, a huge element of the company's success from a talent acquisition perspective. I think the other thing that I would say about talent is that the analogy I think about is that it's like you're building an orchestra or a sports team. And I think something that I've always appreciated is variety and diversity. And I derive a huge amount of personal and professional satisfaction from bringing people together. I always have. And the opportunity to, you know, build this amazing sports team where you're taking care of your defense, you've got your goalies, you've got your midfielders, your forwards, I think is, for me, just a really fun aspect of the job. And something I deeply enjoy because I enjoy the opportunity to learn from specialists and experts in their respective fields.
From the beginning, you characterized Finalis' ultimate goal this way. Finalis aims to become the prominent software solution for the long tail of investment banks. This long tail is comprised of boutique investment banks, you know, from one-person firms to those with around a dozen or so bankers or more, comprising the industry's lower middle market, which, by the way, according to Investopedia's latest assessment, has an annual revenue of more than $10 trillion, which totally blows my mind. That's quite an addressable market. So with just under 2 years under its belt, how far along would you say Finalis has come towards this lofty goal of becoming the prominent software solution for this long tail?
If the vision were a 100-story building, I think we're on the second or third floor.
Not far along.
I think we validated some very important things, but I think we're still in the very early days of manifesting our massive disruptive purpose of becoming the world's largest deal-making platform. And so one of the things that really excites me is all of the opportunity ahead of us. You know, one of our investors told us not long ago, they said, you know, it's interesting. And this is an investor that returned and made an investment more recently, but has kind of consistently made investments into Finalis over the past number of years. They said, you know, it's interesting. Finalis is one of the few companies in our portfolio of companies where the deeper it gets into solving its problems for its customers, the more market opportunity it finds. And I don't know if you sense that in the Lloyd, in the context of our capital market strategy, our new lines of business, on the compliance side of things, but we're constantly.
Absolutely. These days, it's like, you know, seeing mushrooms sprout from the forest floor.
All these, I think our big challenge is focus, because there's so much opportunity in front of us. And I just feel, in other words, maybe the building is more than 100 stories, right? It keeps getting bigger. and so that to me is incredibly exciting. Because ultimately, what this means, you know, building the world's largest deal-making platform, when, what does that mean in practice? It means democratizing access to the private markets. And I'm sure you have stories that you could paint to small business owners in your own family background. I know that I do. You know, my grandparents were dry cleaners in rural Argentina. And it was through the sale of their dry cleaning business that they were able to support my dad and my uncle through college. And how did they sell it? Well, they sold it in the private markets. You know, the dry cleaning business was not a publicly listed company. And this is how wealth can get created for many families. And so, you know, I think sometimes it's easy to lose sight of that reality. And ultimately, what we're focused on is democratizing access to the private markets. We have a very nuanced approach with respect to how we do that, because our primary focus here is on making it easy for any experienced banker to set up their own investment bank on the basis of Finalis' infrastructure. So that democratization, from our perspective, has to start with delivering the best capabilities, the best leverage value possible to investment bankers, placement agents, and independent deal makers, not just in the United States, but around the world. And we believe strongly that that democratization journey has to start by empowering the broker with the best tooling available, so that anybody can have the type of leverage value that they may have otherwise only previously enjoyed at a place like Goldman Sachs.
Mm-hmm. You're basically talking about our clients, you know, the banker clients in Finalize's platform. Is what have you learned about the industry in writ large from our clients specifically? Has this informed the way forward for Finalize from a strategic standpoint?
I think Finalize plays into a number of trends that were already happening prior to COVID and probably have been accelerated by COVID. One of those trends, which I'm sure you're very familiar with, is the gig economy. Mm-hmm. There's also a a generational preference shift in favor of more autonomy, more creativity, and more ownership in people's careers. So I think for those two industry agnostic reasons alone, mm-hmm. Finalize is really focused on solving the right problems because we want to make it easy for anybody to build and scale their own investment banking platform, their own M&A brokerage, their own placement agency. And that in and of itself is a really disruptive concept. On the flip side, there are also very significant industry-specific trends that have been playing out. And probably the most significant is the fact that private market deal volumes have exploded over the last 20 years. They've grown more than 10x CAGR. And the driver of that growth is growth in the lower middle market. So basically smaller transactions. Mm-hmm. And those smaller transactions, by definition, aren't going to be interesting transactions for an investment banker at a place like Goldman Sachs or Deutsche Bank. Mm-hmm. And the reason why is because they're relatively high fixed costs for an investment bank to support a given transaction, irrespective of its size. And as a direct consequence of that, those larger banks have tended to enforce pretty high fee minimums. I think they're sitting at around $5 million fee minimums today within many bulge bracket banks and large boutiques. Mm-hmm. And that's a pretty high fee minimum when you consider the fact that many of our investment bankers would be absolutely thrilled with a $4 million success fee. Uh-huh. And so, you know, we've been observing that trend. And that trend is creating a tidal wave of small and medium-sized investment banks, placement agencies, and independent deal makers that are capitalizing on the growth that we're seeing in the lower middle market.
I know you talked to us, Finalize, about this as unbundling the Goldman Sachs stack. What does it mean in practice?
Well, we start with the most critical thing that an investment banker has to have, which is regulatory affiliations and compliance. Mm-hmm. Because in the United States and in many OECD countries, at least, it's not sufficient for a banker to be credentialed, licensed, or experienced. They need to connect that license, that experience, those credentials with an entity that is in and of itself regulated mm-hmm. by the given securities regulator of that country, which is also the bulwark facing the regulator on behalf of the individual investment banker. Mm-hmm. And that is the kind of absolute requirement for any investment bank to be able to legally and compliantly operate in precisely the countries where they need to be able to operate, because those are the countries where the private markets are the most developed today. And so we start with that. We start with regulatory and compliance. And what we tell investment bankers who are coming from large, more established investment banks or bulge brackets is, you know, we turn the model on its head. So if today an investment banker might be, let's say that a very successful investment banker is generating double-digit millions of dollars a year in revenue for a given bank, that bank will likely take about 90% of that production. Mm-hmm. And the total compensation package for that banker might be sitting at around 10%. Mm-hmm. What we do is we reverse the model and we say, listen, we will provide, Finalis will provide very competitive fee splits so that you have the opportunity to bring home the lion's share of your annual production. We'll do it with nimble and lightweight cloud-based tooling so that you can work on your business from the cloud effectively. And, but you have to do the rest, right? You have to source the company. You have to make sure that you're taking care of your talent or sourcing your own talent. You have to find the investor or the acquirer for the given opportunity.
You're basically talking about, you know, the nuts and bolts of this democratizing aspect, you know, bringing the, you know, this capability of a, you know, of a manager in a bulge bracket bank down to boutique banks and individuals. It's pretty amazing.
Exactly right. And so I think the opportunity for us when I talk about that 100-story building is the opportunity to deliver even more leverage value to investment banks. And so we talk about deal origination solutions, deal execution solutions, deal distribution solutions. And those are all elements of the value proposition that an investment banker at a place like Goldman Sachs might be able to enjoy. The way that we approach it, though, is by unlocking the network effects that we are starting to generate within the platform itself, so that it's not necessarily Finalis that's delivering the deal origination, the distribution, or the execution support directly, but rather that the platform is facilitating access to those types of solutions. And so it's not just an unbundling of the Goldman Sachs desk fee model. It's also an unbundling of a social media platform like LinkedIn, where we're actually building a network that is fundamentally focused on this whole notion of digitizing private market deal execution and democratizing access to the private capital markets, because it's coalescing so many different stakeholders in that ecosystem.
This is a perfect segue, actually, to the last part of our conversation today, which is about Finalis moving forward in the future. So I think we'd love to hear you talk about what you see coming down the pike in the next couple of years, maybe even beyond. Not that I expect you to have a crystal ball into which you can gaze and prognosticate about the future perfectly, or even approximately, but given where you and the team have taken the company at this point, I think it's fair to say that you can foretell with a reasonable degree of confidence that there are things up ahead that you can see and anticipate. So 2 years ago, you declared that private market steelmaking is broken. This summer, after a successful $10 million seed investment raise, you declared in a new post with brass and gumption equal to that original blog post, quote, "We're fixing it," unquote. How is this repair project, as it were, coming along? How is tech-enabled cloud-based compliance as a service gaining traction in the space?
It's a good question. Our number one focus over the next easily couple of years is on our capacity to scale the trust layer, as I call it. What does it mean to scale the trust layer, you might ask? we see a tremendous opportunity in raising the standard of compliance writ large in the private capital markets. And we think that Finalis can be a very critical protagonist in delivering that raising of the bar in this industry. I often say that there's a lot of bad takes in the compliance world. You know, we're living in a time where regulatory guidance is ever evolving. It requires a lot of judgment. And oftentimes there's just a lot of bad advice, bad guidance, poor supervision in this segment of the market. We think that there's a tremendous opportunity to scale the trust layer for small and medium-sized investment banks, placement agencies, and independent deal makers, not just here in the United States, but globally. And the way that you do that is through technology. The way that you do that is by digitizing these workflows and providing, with some business logic, real guidance to compliance officers that work at Finalis and are distributed across the country and eventually globally to make high quality decisions on the basis of complete information. And as far as I'm aware, we're the only ones that are really focused on delivering that, because we recognize that as a regulated platform, we're never going to be able to put compliance fully on autopilot. Nor is that our aspiration. Our aspiration is to have well-informed compliance officers making high-quality decisions at the speed of our investment bankers' businesses. And so that's act one of our journey, is really obsessively focused on scaling that trust layer. Act two of our journey, which in tandem with scaling the trust layer, we are already developing really exciting proof points around, is this capital market strategy. Capital markets at Finalis is not the creation of an investment bank. We don't pretend to ever create an investment bank within Finalis. What we're focused on is on what I think of as meta investment banking support for the investment banks on the Finalis platform. And we have just staffed up a pretty stellar capital markets team to develop and execute on a strategy that's going to be focused on this unbundling of the Goldman Sachs stack that we discussed earlier, where through the platform or the Finalis platform enables investment banks, placement agencies, independent deal makers to source new deals, to execute on those deals, and to distribute those deal opportunities. And so that's an incredibly exciting aspect of the strategy that we believe is a direct consequence, or really enabled by, our ability to successfully scale that trust layer. And with those two initiatives, Lloyd, I think we're going to be very busy for the next 5+ years.
Well, the vision here is just breathtaking. I think I may be biased as a participant in it, but I'm 100% certain that any objective observer of all that you and Finalis have been doing these past 2 years since launch would come to the same conclusion. To say that the 150 investment banks and 220 registered representatives now on Finalis' rapidly growing platform is a validation of this business would be to understate things greatly, I think. And for my perch as an observer of your amazing adventure, as well as your colleague, this has been an extraordinarily eventful 2 years for you in Finalis, Fed, in so many ways. Have you had the time to reflect on it all, on what it means? What is the beating heart of the Finalis story and the soul of it?
as I mentioned earlier, I don't tend to spend a lot of time looking backwards or looking down. I think we've done a fair amount of reflection over the past few minutes. I do think that it is extraordinary. And I think what makes it all the more extraordinary is the opportunity to work alongside so many talented people from whom I'm learning new things every single day. And that's a pretty special thing in a career, to have that chance, in the mission of building something quite as audacious as what Finalis is building. And so to me, that's what gets me jumping out of bed in the morning, is the opportunity to build, create, and deliver value to our clients alongside such a talented group of professionals.
Well, Fed, this has been a singularly remarkable discussion. I think thank you so much for spending this time and conversation with us and for sharing your story and Finalis' story with our podcast audience. I think the next chapter of this story is still down the road a ways, but I have a feeling it won't take another 2 years for the telling of it to arrive for our listeners and friends. I, for one, am cinching up my seatbelt tighter for the ride to come, privileged as I am to be on it with you and the rest of Team Finalis. So until then...
Thank you so much, Lloyd. It was a pleasure to be with you today.
Finalis is a broker-dealer platform with everything that M&A advisors, investment bankers, and placement agents need to succeed. We deliver a broker-in-a-box regulatory affiliation solution, replete with tech-enabled compliance, research and analytics, deal lifecycle management tools, and a first-of-its-kind deal marketplace. Learn more at www.finalis.com. You've been listening to Pencils Down, a Finalis podcast. Keep connected with us by subscribing to the show on your favorite podcast player. If you like what you've heard, please rate the show. That helps us keep covering the latest in the private securities brokerage landscape. Thanks for listening. Until next time.